Welcome to Commentary on Fire at the Podcast on Fire Network, and my name is Kenneth Bolson, and with me is my good friends from the Undefeatable Commentary, now Commentary veterans and Podcast on Fire Network veterans. So with me in the POF commentary booth, which is not as sleazy and filthy as it sounds, is Tom KW. Say hi, Tom.
Hey, everyone. Good to be back.
And Hong Kong Dave.
Hi, everyone.
Yeah. I need to remember your handles. We've actually settled on the fact that you're officially called something here.
Yeah.
but regardless, it's not like we confuse Hong Kong Dave and David Harris with some with you know, two people on the network and vice and ditto for you, Tom. So no worries. It's just a little minor thing. Okay. Brief contact information before we launch this commentary and tell you what movie it is. Even though if you clicked on it, you might know what movie it is. Obviously. You're listening to Commentary on Fire on the Podcast on Fire Network. The website is at podcastonfire.com. Our message forum is at that site as well, podcastonfire.com/forum, where if you register, you get access to the members-only archive of cut conversations, exclusive movie reviews, outtakes, and all good fun. Look out for bonus episodes in the same vein that's going to be posted on the website in the future. Join our discussion group on Facebook. Just search Podcast on Fire and the group comes up, as well as the our actual page. You can like our page at facebook.com/POF Network. The group doesn't have a simple name like that, so just search Podcast on Fire Network and it'll be there. We also have a Twitter account at twitter.com/podcastonfire. I do my writing, and that is at sogoodreviews.com. My sleazy side is definitely on there, as well as my ninja side, IFD side, Taiwan side, and my horror side. And just, I'm just a guy that covers what I think is cool movies. And that is also video review at sleazykvideo.com for your viewing pleasure, if you will. I'm not on camera though, but it's a more simple, bite-sized spoken reviews of the written reviews. I think that's more easy to take in. I'm also on Twitter at twitter.com/sogoodreviews. Subscribe to our iTunes feed. You can find that in the show post of this episode and every episode, as well as on the site. And listen to us on the go with the application Stitcher, downloadable to your smartphone and your computer. David Harris, Hong Kong Dave, has a little endeavor on Facebook. He keeps track up and up to date. That's called Hong Kong Gig Guide, and we'll link to that. But you can also search it on Facebook. Just type in Hong Kong Gig Guide, and that's the first thing that pops up. No rival Hong Kong Gig Guides out there, you know.
Just me.
Yeah, just you. And you're doing a smashing job, David. Anyway, so. No need for more than one. You're the supreme king of Hong Kong Gig Guides.
Yeah.
Okay. And you, Tom, of course, do some reviews over at vcinemashow.com, home of the VCinema podcast. Our friends over there, Coffin John, Josh, Rufus, and Dr. Stan Glick is one of the newest hosts, and a bunch of reviewers, including you. So we'll link to your review index, so to say. The search results from typing in Tom Kent Williams on vcinemashow.com will generate about 5 or 6 reviews and more coming in the future.
Yep.
Okay, the movie Chosen. And we started, of course, initially when doing commentaries, we chose a big movie with many names to talk of, Eastern Condors. Then quickly launched into doing commentaries for personal favorites, obscure Hong Kong or otherwise movies that we just feel would be cool to have commentaries on, just for our own benefit, really. And Mishmash Couples followed, Scared Stiff, Undefeatable, and Tonight. Not a funny movie as such. It's a violent little one called Nobody's Hero from 1999. And essentially, I always do background at the beginning of the track, but essentially there's no background here other than it got made. And it provided otherwise comedic lead Liu Wai-hung, and an annoying comedic lead at that. He was provided with a way different role and kind of a breakout performance in terms of fan acclaim. So that's all there is, really. We'll do our best to fill the commentary of this very beloved, kind of a contrasting but yet not classic piece of Hong Kong 80s violence. But that's selling the movie short too, in my opinion. So Well, we're going to have fun and mix info and fun as always. So, in terms of availability, there's really none. I mean, if you have it and you want to watch it with us, then we will do it the usual way. We'll do a countdown that goes 3, 2, 1, and at the word click, you'll start the commentary and watch it with us. But more than ever, I think a YouTube edition is needed for most crowds. And I've seen the movie, though, pop up on the internet now, on YouTube and torrents. I think it's been made available from tape sources like we're watching a tape version of it. Sometimes for these kind of gritty movies, that's the best look for the movie, in my opinion, to have a bit of a low grade VHS tape to evoke mood. But more on that when we start the commentary. And that's about it. So, my friends and co-hosts, are you ready to dive into this one?
Yep.
Goody. And the countdown shall commence. Let's just do a final prep on my side here, just to make sure I'm good. So, the countdown shall commence, and it's 3, 2, 1, click. Some production company, maybe, but we quickly launched into the credit title here. Cityscapes certainly are never inspiring when watching credit sequences out of Hong Kong movies, and you know, IFD did this often, just random shots of Hong Kong. But I love that the music that's essentially on top of sort of these the night scenes in Hong Kong is kind of jarring music. I thought that like the VHS that David provided for us had like damage to the audio because it sounds very jarring. But as a matter of fact, it is the music as intended. Is reminiscent kind of if any of you guys heard Cabaret Voltaire, this kind of experimental synth music, but it certainly evokes mood.
It's got an odd kind of like a discordant kind of quality, almost like out of tune.
Yeah,
but it's quite a harsh sound to it as well.
Yeah, and otherwise the
harsh film.
Yeah, exactly. And overall, the movie has quite a pronounced synthesizer score otherwise, which I really dig. Yeah.
I really like it, yeah. It's very strange and off-kilter, but really nice.
Yeah. And therefore probably not stolen from, that's Ecstasy of Gold from Good, Bad and Ugly.
Do you recognize that one, Ken, though?
By now I do, yeah. it just took me watching Leone films and listening to Morricone scores. I finally know what Ecstasy of Gold is, you know. I'm behind the times. It's a fair VHS print, this. That was put out by Eastern Heroes in the UK. We're watching a UK-sourced source here. But the Laserdisc that came out in Hong Kong from Star was full screen like this is, which is not a problem. The movie plays out well in full screen, but they didn't even have any English subtitles on it. They had newly generated big-ass Chinese subtitles. So it was lacking English, yeah, and the subtitles that were chosen were not subtle in any way, which is a shame. And this has sort of never been seen since. I saw it, a lesser copy of it based on this very subtitle print, which is all fine. The subtitles are very small, so they're never cropped, really, even in this, which was always a 185 frame movie from the beginning, anyway.
These opening scenes, I really like them. I think they do a great job of like laying out his characters, his character traits, and his motivations. I mean, like just a minute second ago here when he picked up the free businessman, you can kind of see that kind of look of he's almost like sort of disgusted, you know. You can tell he's sort of he's really not, you know, it's not his his job of choice. He's doing it because he has to. And
yeah, it's the actor Liu Wai Hung. They said we'll speak more of him, and it's the central theme of the movie though that he's sick of society. He wants to do something about it, and his journey really is about, you know, choosing his battles, and in the end choosing one battle out of, you know, a million battles out there. And that's a wise thing to realize. He will realize it kind of the hard way though, that you can't save the entire world, and you know, as I said, we'll speak more of Liu Weihong, and he's usually a comedic actor in film, and this is his very, very much an unusual role for him. And early on, I can see, having watched a shitload of films with him prior to this commentary, this role feels and looks different already, early on here. Mm. You know, it's not like we are... Yeah, go ahead.
This is the famous Yamate police station. This is if you to the left of it, off to the left, you've got the Jade and Temple Street markets, and off to the right of this, you've got like a really kick-ass repertory cinema.
Right.
So I'm quite familiar with this area here.
Oh, cool.
From the visits to Hong Kong.
I knew there was a reason we had David on, Ken.
Yeah, it's travelogue time, you know.
Yeah.
But going back to Liu, he looks tired. He seems to be tired, like a person, you know, like a person is tired of society. And there's no mugging, and certainly no dramatic mugging, because sometimes with comedic actors, they act big, even when doing dramatically. But I think Liu does really well, and he's a brave character that jumps into action during the robbery. And in other scenes in Hong Kong movies, regular people, don't want anything to do with the police. Just they want to turn their eye and back to this and just hope for the best that they are never involved. And obviously, he wants to take a stand. And the role is funny based on that scenario in the toilet where he chases the robber. You know, he screams to lure out the robber, and it's kind of charming, calming man, naive behavior. You know, come out, you know, he tries, and he breaks sweat early, and you know, he's violent kind of early, and it's not an odd sight for this actor for us to see this, who are familiar with him. He was never, you know, a Dean Sheck in terms of comedic annoyance, but comedy was kind of his forte, I guess, or is what he was known for, and he's suitably given a role that is an underdog role. You know, he's unlucky, and that's only, you know, the first sign of him being unlucky. You know, good intentions gone wrong in that scene. And by the way, I got to also point out, I am weak for the type of colored lights chosen for this type of scene. You know, bring out the green, bring out the red, bring out the blue for me. I love that. It's such, especially on VHS. I know that probably doesn't make sense to anyone, but I love when the colors always almost bleed. You know, they're so strong they bleed, so...
Yeah, it works with the film, I think. The format it's on, we're watching it through.
Yeah. And obviously he wants to become a police officer, you know, he wants to go all the way in that regard to be a public servant. And it's fun. I think he questions here during the scene where she thinks he's colorblind, you know, and he is, as a matter of fact, as it turns out a little bit. But I think he argues essentially, it's not word by word from subtitles, that why can't imperfections, you know, in me mean that I can fight, you know, in an imperfect world and, you know, imperfect robbers and robberies, you know. I still have the attitude to do this, you know, don't fail me because of technicality. Which is, you know, I know, you know, applying for a police officer should be strict, but I like that, you know, he has an attitude about him.
That... Yeah, I think failing the entrance test there, it's one of, you know, it's one of the many experiences that he has throughout the course of the film, actually, sort of feeds into the story in its later stages. Mm-hmm. I actually think that the script in the opening, in this opening sort of 5-10 minutes, actually smarter than it probably needs to be, but it's, you know, it's very welcome to have that kind of effort put in.
Oh yeah, definitely.
So, yeah.
It's not a stretch to reach, you know, the good stuff. It already early on starts the script to set up the sort of the journey and the theme. And based on that, I briefly talk about the scriptwriter, which is known if you start to talk about some of the movies the scriptwriter has been behind. Sung Kang-jung, mostly known as a frequent writer on Stephen Chow films, ranging from God of Cookery in 1996 and onwards, including on CJ7. And in fan circles, though, as well as that rep, Tsang is known for the one and only movie he directed. It's widely regarded as one of the nastiest and grim Category 3 movies ever made, and it's called Intruder, made during the early days of the Johnny Toes and Wai Kar Fai's production house Milky Way. It was done in 1997. and it stars the terrific and solid Mr. Wu Qianlian from A Moment of Romance and Beyond Hypothermia. For fantastic actress, and she plays this mainlander trying to get into Hong Kong by taking over other people's identities, and she terrorizes poor Wayne Lai in that movie in a sort of a calculated, sadistic manner. And it's very unsettling and incredibly well shot, shot by frequent Johnny Tosin cinematographer, which is fucking hell, I've forgotten his name, but regardless, he's the one that shot many of his movies, and including that one. And so, well done, Sang. And go out and look up Intruder. It's on German DVD with subtitles. And here's... I recognize this actress, but she was in a Hong Kong movie database, and I didn't recognize where she was from otherwise. But here's a bitch, you know.
And you feel so sorry for him in this scene.
Yeah, you wonder, though.
So sorry.
You wonder, though, was this relationship that he apparently has with her ever good? Or did she... you know, turn into an unkind woman over time, but it doesn't look that way, you know. But you wonder, though, in a kind of, I guess it's a sign of a bad setup, how did these two get together? You know what
you
I mean?
Almost feel like they were kind of, you know, at one point living in poverty together, and she's kind of made her way up, and now she's not interested in him. I kind of get the vibe from her actions and what she says to him.
Yeah, I can see that. And I think that there's... I might not have been paying attention properly, but I think there's, you know, that he's an immigrant. As a matter of fact, he's a mainland immigrant, and I guess that should go hand in hand with what you were saying, Tom, and certainly his friend that he spoke with 2-3 scenes ago is also a fellow immigrant. But there's signs of further strings of bad luck in that scene for Liu Weihong. You know, he has good intentions, and then he wants to, like, you know, here he sits, you know, saying the right things, you know, being a little bit tough. But in the moments, you know, trying to stand up for himself, he can't. And he sort of gears down and becomes the one that is easily pushed around, which is very sad. And, wow, I love red neon illuminating his apartment. I would love to live in this kind of apartment. And but anyway, we do see Cathy Chow, but I think we should go on and speak a little bit about Ali Liu Weihong, who is playing the harmonica rather unconvincingly. But go ahead, David. What is to say about Liu Weihong?
Yeah, Liu Weihong was born in 1957, joined TVB as a young man in 1977. Worked in various TV series before hitting big in 1979.
It's this wonderful, by the way. The joy, sort of naive joy. And then what kind of party is he getting into? So, yeah, go ahead.
Hitting big in 79 of a show that has the familiar English title of The Good, the Bad and the Ugly. It is his success in this show that earned him the nickname of Ah-Chan. It also became used as a means of reference to mainland immigrants of the era. The show also starred Chow Yun-Fat, Shi Qin, Carol Dodo Cheng and Simon Yam. He made his feature debut in 1980 alongside Chow Yun-Fat in Police Sir. Worked in film throughout the decade. Along the way, working with the likes of Moon Lee, Xiao Feng, Kenny B, and... And a number of films with Kent Cheng. He finished the decade on a high with the double whammy of the film we're doing the commentary on today and the Yun Biu starrer, The Iceman Cometh. He pretty much stopped working in film shortly after and has, in the last 20 years, only made two films, 2001's Comic King with Nick Say and Eason Chan, and the 2006 drama Rain Dogs. Most of his time in the last two decades has been spent in a variety of business ventures, including karaoke, barbecue, and various agricultural businesses. Notably, he has a brand of organic rice named after his... nickname/breakout TV role. Comedically an acquired taste, but has left behind a number of films that people still talk about today, not least of all Nobody's Hero. And he's got TV and film that people remember him for, so that's not such a bad thing.
No, never a bad thing, no. I want to track back a little. I love this when he reacts to his girlfriend Monica smoking, and the subtitles read, you should learn smoking. You know what? I think she, I think she does know. but really, it's distressing and really cruel how they make fun of him. This is stuff that gets to me, to be honest. It's not funny.
Yeah, it's very affecting. I think the way it's shot as well, with the when there was a shot through the camera lens, it was very like all eyes on him.
Yes.
So very, very, very cruel.
And, you know, it's a role I think that is very thought out in the way they cast him. And it's not like he was, you know, he showed up first or anything. Or, you know, it really seems like they thought this out and wanted to find a role that fit him or find an actor to fit this role. And, you know, I don't think it's very random the way he was cast in this movie. As the movie shows all throughout, I think he has a good through line. A logical through line. Again, he doesn't slip into his, you know, a quiet taste of comedy as such.
I think that whole sequence there, the party and the news that, you know, she's going off to Japan, it's a real kind of, you know, a 1-2 kind of punch to, you know, he's already quite sort of, you know, damaged and, you know, sort of disheartened by this point. And that's a real kind of, just a real kind of low blow.
Yeah. And the blows were getting lower, you know, as the movie goes on. You know, it's really distressing and heartbreaking. You know, on some of his movies, I watched a few, including the one movie here's Cathy Chow. How wonderful she is. I think she's an underused actress. But, you know, we will get back to that once she's in the movie a bit more. I saw his only directorial effort as a research for this commentary called Chase a Fortune, where he co-stars with Danny Lee. And it is painfully unfunny the first half is, you know, it's a look at journalist, and then Liu acts as paralyzed for money as a boxer has accidentally put him in a hospital as he throws him down from a scaffolding during a commercial shoot. The boxer is Wong Qing, by the way, the famous actor Wong Qing with his great, great smile. We'll get back to this. I like this scene. I think he applies for a job as a security guard, and now he has his speech now. You know, this is what I want. He doesn't even look the guy in the eye. He just stares in the ground, you know. He's trained for this speech, and it goes unnoticed.
I love that bit there. That's got to be the worst translation of pop guy I've ever heard in my life. the translators, it's definitely not that, that's for sure.
But his trained speech goes unnoticed. No one has time to stop and listen to the music of people with who wants to help out, you know, just hire people and get them out there. You know, he even fails at his little Bruce Lee Travis Bickle moment coming up here. No, it's reminiscent of the scene in Taxi Hunt, only a bit more broad, when Anthony Wong is trying to put his gun into his pants and he falls down his pants leg, pant leg. So that's by the way, I'll get back to that note. It's a latter note. See Felix Locke here, by the way, exchanging money with Kev Chow. Sort of a mysterious relationship that we don't know much about yet, anyway. And I think he thinks that she's a prostitute because they run a brothel in the in the stairwell of his in the same apartment complex he lives in. But going back to Chase of Fortune, you know, Wong Qing plays the boxer who thinks he's paralyzed, Liu Aihong, and he's not, but he and Danny Lee put on a scheme. You know, he feels remorse, the boxer, and Liu takes advantage of it and basically brings in the boxer as a maid. And it turns out what Liu's strengths as a director is when portraying comedy between very few people in a limited space, because when they are alone, him and Wong Qing, they are so good at making situational comedy work. And after a while, Wong Qing tries to fool him into standing up, you know, and dresses up as a zombie to scare him. he puts piranhas in his bathtub, and it's actually a good half of a movie, second half of a movie. So that was directorial skill. So early on, when the kids were, he was running after the kids before he picks up the shit here. that was kind of a serious scene for me, to be honest, because I think, unfortunately, we as humans pick up the energy of the weak, And unfortunately, in some humans, it's a natural instinct to exploit the weak, you know. Even the kids notice that. I know there are kids and up to no good, and you know, but still, in the mall there, when they are definitely not, you know, afraid of him, despite the uniform and all of that, and the kids. But then again, even this job takes a bit more edge to, you know, gain respect. And Liu Aihong or Leng Gun is never bound to be, you know, he's never bound to be respected, even in the uniform. At least not initially. He would probably need many years to develop some kind of edge to him, you know. And that never happens.
Yeah, it's definitely at the time, and you know, and it exists still today. There's like something of an anti-mainland, you know, attitude within Hong Kong. Not necessarily massively prevalent, but it's there. It was certainly there at this time this film is set, and you know, it's there to an extent still today. But, you know, there's definitely like sort of, you know, they know if someone, you know, is an immigrant from the mainland, and mm-hmm. they're sort of, you know, they can be treated, you know, in a sort of a, and, you know, they treat them in a different way sometimes than they would do.
Harder to get jobs and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah.
Don't disturb me shifting though. Yeah. Yeah.
Buffalo. Buffalo. Yeah. I like that one.
Triad owned businesses as part of Hong Kong life. That certainly was very common back then. I don't know how common it is now, how much they have cracked down on triad activities. But it certainly was in the movie industry as well, you know, even production companies being, you know, having triad connections and certain movies being funded by triads. So, you know, there's no surprise that the security guards, the mainlanders, if Buffalo is a mainlander as well, it's no surprise that they're actually working for the triads, essentially. Which is, you know, scary as it turns out, because within this mall, there's, you know, drug businesses and, you know, dangerous triads, not just, you know, low-life triads with attitude only, you know, where they just stand there a la Once Upon a Time in Triad Society 2, where they just stand on opposite sides and go, like, what? But no one ever does anything. Here's a little funny scene, actually, that works.
Yeah, can't beat a comedy gang fight.
Yeah, because the triads certainly are not the triad fight doesn't feel dangerous as such, you know.
Disappointed to not see any cream pies, though.
But then again, in terms of the subtitles, it's you always know what goes on in this movie despite the subtitles, you know what I mean? So it's not a terrible job the subtitles do. They don't obscure the movie. And Liu has one of his many cool scenes with Cathy Chow. So,
ooh.
let's mention a little bit, David, about the wonderful Cathy Chow.
Yeah. Cathy was born in December 1966, and during the 80s was an entrant in the annual Miss Hong Kong pageant, before subsequently embarking on a modelling and acting career. Like many, she started in TV series before moving on to feature films. Made her debut in 1988, How to Pick Girls Up, from director Wong Jing.
Yes, sir.
Throughout the 90s, Cathy continued to work both in film and TV, appearing in, amongst other films, Holy Virgin vs. Evil Dead.
From the star of Hitman comes Holy Virgin vs. Evil Dead.
Fight Back to School 3 with Stephen Chow, and The Fantastic Beast Cups with Wong's Anthony and Michael.
Yeah.
During the 90s, Cathy also turned her hand to music, releasing CDs in 95 and 97. In the late 90s, Cathy moved from TVB to its rival, chief rival, in fact, only rival, really, ATV, before going to Beijing to further her career. Upon returning to Hong Kong in 2008, she rejoined TVB and then starred in the hit TV series EU.
Oh, by the way, EU, isn't that where the character of Laughing Gore started, that got its spin-off movies?
Yeah, I believe so.
The Michael Cech character got his spin-off movies from the EU Emergency Unit series, I think it was called.
Yeah. Since she has since worked chiefly in TV, before reappearing in cinema screens this year, probably actually technically 2011, but in Frankie Chan's Legendary Amazons with Cecilia Chung, Richie Ren, and legendary fighting female Yukari Oshima.
Right on.
That's right up to date. That's literally only just coming out on DVD and Blu-ray, pretty much as we speak.
Yeah, mid-January, right about now, We missed, but it's worth quoting probably the best gag in the film, where he fights his way out while she is carrying him, you know, he's piggybacking her. Which I think is a great little moment, you know. Let's fight our way out by riding the blind girl, essentially.
it flips on its the cliche on its head, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's thinking. And he also kind of, you know, milks his hero status when all the security guards actually come to his rescue, you know. So he's quite self-centered at this point, you know. If the character is still trying to learn how to, you know, handle situations with grace.
I think the sort of kind of scenes that are sort of like a light relief actually works really well, because what it does is it kind of sets you up for the rest of the film, you know.
Even this scene where foolishly, you know, messes up trying to climb out of the window, you know, it's a kind of charmingly naive. This character tries, but, you know, he's just bound to fail, even in slapstick ways. But slapstick ways aren't, you know, intrusive ways within the film.
The small moments of comedy, but I think they're very subdued and, like, lifelike. I think that's why they work. They're not kind of over the top. And, I mean, it all adds up to an emotional stake in the characters, especially Argon. Because he's such a loser, you kind of, you know, you sympathise with him.
Absolutely, good point. It's a wonderful little sequence. And I think, you know, she's very young, Kathy, in this role, obviously. She doesn't look that, like she's even... she's obviously a bit into her 20s, 23 or 24,
yeah,
what have you. But she looks very... she looks like a girl, and she's supposed to look like a girl in this movie. I think they photograph her really well. She has a presence, you know, even when in a girl role, which is not a bad thing. I'm not saying it's a bad thing, you know, it's supposed to be, it fits that they have a connection. It's not like she's a woman out of his range. It seems like they could connect easier than him and Monica. Monica possibly being looking like this at one point now has, so to say, you know, taken a step up class wise or what have you, as you alluded to earlier, Tom.
Yeah, there's a stark contrast between both of them. The other one's quite, like, you know, young and virgin-like, and the other one's quite, you know, dolled up and got other ambitions. So, yeah, it's a nice juxtaposition between two of them.
I can't say I'm very familiar with Kathy's work, but, you know, there's a tree of cool movies that she's been in, including this one, but also she's 3 years later, 2 years later, she's in Insanity, by otherwise action director Tony Leung Siu-hung, with Simon Yam, where, you know, it's a strange little, like, haunted statue movie, it seems, at first, and then the other half is, you know, Simon Yam as this schizophrenic cop just terrorizing her while she's alone in her house. So it's a, you know, a very sparse movie in that regard, and very tense, and she's made to be very much a sexy eye candy in that movie, which fits. She's, you know, she looks more like a woman in that movie, not, you know, a girl like in this movie. But it's a terrific chase and terror ride for the brief moments that that works, you know. Well, it's a brief movie and half the movie works, and that means it's sort of a, you know, a mini movie works and the other mini movie doesn't in Insanity. And who doesn't like seeing Simon Yam snap on film? It's the greatest thing ever. I really liked her different looks in Beast Cops. First, she has that sort of messy red hair. She plays a prostitute, I think, that it's essentially becomes Michael Wong's girlfriend. And
it's kind of like the Korean equivalent is like, Mama-san. Like, you know, she's kind of like the sort of... like a den mother. She looks after the girls and.
Oh yeah, yeah, I think so. Kind of thing, and yeah. I loved her look when she comes with a soup to the police station with to Michael Wong's character, and she's sort of straightened her hair a little bit, and she has a wonderful smile, and she's absolutely gorgeous too. I mean, there's no doubt she looks gorgeous here, and she was gorgeous in 1998 as well. So
yeah,
Nina. Sorry,
I think that would be a great one for a commentary too. I think Beast Cops.
Well, yeah. There already is one by Bay Logan and Gordon Chandler. So I mean, I wouldn't want to step on them. The director has had his say, so I'll actually skip that one. You can do that, guys. I welcome you to do that. But
let's do it, Dave.
It's a great movie, and I would only make Michael Wong jokes throughout. Ah!
He's good in that, though.
He is very good. I love Michael in that one.
Yeah.
It's fun that this little cooking scam that he's, you know, she's blind, obviously, and, you know, he lost the actual fresh fish and now he's used canned fish. And I love that she sort of sees through, so to say. That's not a bad pun, but she sees through that cooking scam. But they have charming interaction with each other. It's not like he becomes disillusioned when she notices that. And, you know, look at her smile. You know, she likes the company. And he has the farce element. That could have been a farce element. You know, uh-oh, hide in the closet while I take care of my other girlfriend. But it's going to turn out to be a horrible, horrible scene. It's good, though, that she knows right away when she's behind the cloth here exactly what goes on, you know. So she's not dumb. She's absolutely not dumb. She's sharp as hell. And, you know, I really dig Kathy in the few movies I've seen her in. I recommend everyone to try and get Insanity. It's a very good movie. It's disturbing in a way because her husband in the movie is Raymond Wong. And it's disturbing because they don't fit at all. They have sort of a half a sex scene, I guess. But when you're the writer and producer, you can do that shit.
Raymond Wong, Happy Ghost.
Yes, sir. Oh. All's well, ends well, Raymond Wong. And it's not like he looked like a stud in 1991 or anything. And it looks kind of creepy, to be honest. But he's out of the movie by the halfway point. When did that terrorizing, half of the movie, house terror part of the movie happens, he's not there, thankfully. So it doesn't matter. Talk about heartbreaking, and when she says, you know, or if she said it already, you know, you were just my servant. I mean, my heart sank. What a fucking horrible thing to say to someone.
I'm gonna trade in my man card now and say I was very close to tears when this whole scene wrapped up. It is really heartbreaking, but. Again, it only just kind of ups the emotional investment into Argon, into the character.
Yeah, and I mean, it's not over the top the way it clings on to this, but it's not necessarily a wise choice, obviously, and he needs to learn to let go, but it doesn't make it any less heartbreaking or, you know, he's absolutely the victim. They invent this scenario. Where his fucking bandage gets stuck and it's slow motion and it's painful as hell. You know, you don't need gore to channel pain on screen. That's certainly a great little point.
And it really feels like he's on the brink here. And, you know, it's just the next thing's gonna just like.
Yeah, look at that.
Set him off.
Yeah, look at that. He's taken care of. You know, he's giving her gifts and framed cards and all of that. That takes effort and care. She just, look at that. I mean, who wants, you know, even my heart sinks now looking at this, even without sound. It's just visual cinema in a way.
That's just the cherry on the shit cake, isn't it? That last bit when they throw everything out. It's horrible.
Absolutely. Going back a little to other movies with Liu Weihong. You know, so I recommend Chase of Fortune. It's one of his best movies, and Wong Ching and him are great in it. And then you have a movie I really dislike called Crazy Nuts. You know, and it's a great title, and it starts with Melvin Wong in that. And aside from a minor chuckle and a ninja saying, "Aya!" Which is funny, That's when he's a grating and even an anonymous presence in movies, Liu Weihong. Not overly annoying a la Dean Shek at the worst of times. He's a genius at other times, Dean Shek, but, you know, lacking comedic energy, you know, as a comedic performer. And then you have a latter-day movie with that he starred in called Daddy, Father and Papa, where he co-stars along Sammo Hung. And while it's somewhat of a broad...
Yeah, but
we're going to stop here. This is actor Chang Ging.
Long Arm the Law.
Yes, he's very much known from Long Arm the Law, part of the Big Circle gang, mainland robbers in Long Arm of the Law. And kind of a role he's reprised when he appeared in movies, because he always played gangsters, often played gangsters to some extent. But I'm not too sure if he played mainland gangsters again, but he certainly had a gangster look in a way, Chang Ging.
It's actually a real contrast, his character here, to his character in Long Arm the Law. He was like the real kind of, he's the real kind of stupid guy and that. Mm-hmm. But in here, he's like, you know, he's kind of smart and like successful.
Yeah, everybody needs to make money somehow, even illegally, even though he's not a vicious gangster like Sunny Fang, as we'll see later. Again, Daddy, Father and Papa with Sammo Hung and Liu Weihong. Liu Weihong's son is kidnapped, and Liu Weihong plays this really callous, money-minded dad who's neglecting his son, and then he's kidnapped by Betrayed, as I said. And you really dislike him intensely, and that's by design, and that works, actually. And, you know, it's all part of a basic journey where he realizes he should love his son more, and there's even a heartbreaking scene in it when director Clifton Coe, in like a quiet moment, has Liu finding his son's drawings, his little crayon drawings, depicting the father as literally chasing the dollar. And I like that. It was a very, very good moment. It's a fairly full plate of a Hong Kong movie, Daddy, Father and Papa, as it has flamboyant gay characters, animal cruelty, triads digging up and cutting up corpses. Tommy Wong as one of the triads, he swallows a Woody the Woodpecker toy, and every time he speaks, you know what sound effect they have. And it's great via Tommy Wong. Tommy Wong is funny.
I gotta get that now.
It's funny actually. It's a good little movie. And Sammo doesn't do any action aside from a very short underwater fight. So it's one just, you know, it's not a, you know, a, like Paper Marriage. It doesn't have, you know, brutal action or anything. Because Paper Marriage is a different Sammo Hung movie, because it's a romantic movie as well. We talked about hearts sinking, and talk about you know, sunshine coming into your life again when this wonderful character of, you know, that Cathy Chow plays, you know, she gives him a present just because, you know, and he's sort of still thinks of Monica and is a bit, you know, full of himself and angry, and then she breaks that for him, you know. Look at him, he's genuinely happy all of a sudden. Monica is out of his life, finally. You know, and he can appreciate the kindness rather than brush it away, which he was close to, I think. And so small and so elegant was the subtitle. And I really dig these two on screen. I think they look like they are getting on for real, too. Or what do you say, guys?
Yeah, I mean, it's they play it well. You can believe it. You can buy it. It's not a stretch. It doesn't make you work hard. It's sort of, you know, it comes across on the screen as genuine.
Yeah. Unlike her and Raymond Wong in Insanity. Definitely different.
Yeah, it's...
Outrun!
Oh, wow. I really remember playing some of these old arcade games.
I never played it on the arcade. I had it on my Commodore 64 on a tape. You know, kids, games were released on tapes back in the day.
What?
Yes. Yeah. Do you remember that, Tom?
Oh, no. I do, yeah.
but of course, it would have been so much great playing it in the arcade, you know, the moving car.
This bit is actually really interesting, because I read, there's an article recently in the newspaper that someone, you know, doing the same kind of thing in restaurants, building a salad tower. And weirdly enough, that was in China as well. It was just, you know, just like last week. It's about, you know, there's a whole article about how to structure it so you could build it sort of tall, you know, kind of make it with like sort of carrots and whatever at the bottom to give it as like a foundation. And then, you know, you put all the other bits either in the middle or on, you know, around the edges. So. But But yeah, it's really odd. Really odd to read that article and then watch this and see it in this.
And look at, you know, Gunnar, he has confidence to actually pull this off himself. Yeah. He's not afraid to be pushed around. He actually does this, and he loves it. It's mean, yeah, but, you know, it's a development in the character, seriously. It's actually
very
funny.
He's got such a... You can track his progression.
Look at him. He's genuinely enjoying himself. You know?
It's like, he's got some, it's a bit of sort of a confidence to even try something.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, he slowly gets more and more confident throughout the film.
While he's on the screen a little bit more, we have Felix Locke here to the left. So, Tom, what is to say about Felix Locke while we enjoy kind of a montage as well?
Yeah, he was an actor who mostly works in TV in Hong Kong, but he still has a few gems in his body of work on the big screen, appearing mostly in small roles in a few, you know, fan favourites such as Inspector Chocolate, Rosa, and Flaming Brothers. And he's also appeared in quite a few recent blockbusters, notably 2008's Action Thriller Connected, Overheard 1 and 2, as different characters, no less, in each film. Ivy Ho's Claustrophobia and Edmund Pang's Dream Home, recently.
Yeah, I've not seen Dream Home yet, so I wonder if there's a big role in there or not. Did you see Dream Home, David?
Yeah, I've seen Dream Home. By the looks of that face, I think he's the... he plays a husband who comes back to find Josie Ho's character, in his home, killing his pregnant wife, basically. So
right, okay.
It's quite grisly.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'd be pretty sure that was him in that role.
I've not seen him a lot, but I'm mainly familiar with him through a recurring role on the 2003 40-plus episode TV series Triumph in Disguise, starring Francis about airline pilots. It was released there with fan subs many years ago, so I got to see that subtitle. And, you know, I've seen the face and I recognize the face, but it's not one I've encountered because, again, it's a majority of the careers on TV. But I did rewatch Claustrophobia, where he plays the superior of Ikin Cheng's character, and he's part of the gang that carpools the young gang and the old gang, and obviously Ikin Cheng and Karina Lam's character. He's always this bothered boss, you know. He needs to speak his mind, needs to be right all the time, and has a paranoia about cameras being everywhere. And he's right. It's a very funny scene where there's actually a camera in the toilet. So I like him. He seems fit for bad guy roles, but he also, in Triumph in Disguise, has a very kind role, you know, despite that hard exterior. But he was kind. But then again, you watch him in the Wong Jing produced, actually co-produced by him and his father. Yeah, that's funny. Wong Jing co-produced with his father, Wong Ting Lam, My Neighbors Are Phantoms. The wonderful movie where Felix plays the master vampire in that family of vampires worshipping Satan. That movie also features the best Charlie Cho scene ever, which isn't even in a Category 3 movie. He has great peeping equipment. He's the technically savvy peeper. That's how you describe the Charlie Cho scene in that one. And otherwise, it's a fun, gruesome, creative little movie, My Neighbors Are Phantoms, that ends with Nat Chan in the Game of Death tracksuit stuck in a photograph that is slowly turning black and white, which means he needs to get out quick, while fighting with Felix. So it's quite creative, actually. I very much recommend My Neighbors Are Phantoms. When I mean gruesome, it literally is gruesome. They eat pulsating brains when they think they're eating hamburgers because they're...
Yummy!
Yeah. Because the family, you know, puts spells on them in that way. And so it's good fun. Not an actor you guys have encountered as such?
Nope.
I
mean, in the recent movies, maybe. But I haven't seen much of the recent movies, other than Claustrophobia.
Yeah, I've got Overheard. I don't remember him specifically from that. But...
Mm-hmm. I've seen both Rosa and Flaming Brothers. Can't remember him.
Yeah.
To be honest.
Yeah. So after a day of very upbeat day, and it certainly seems like there's a romance in the works here. But I think these two characters kind of have a respect for each other there, where you know he he feels that he shouldn't take advantage of her, and in that regard, there's enough connection there where they both care for each other.
Yeah.
So it's not one-sided where he does all the legwork again, akin to the Monica relationship, which is, you know, who wouldn't want that? Who wouldn't want someone who thinks of you? Again, him giving, she giving her the present. He getting the present from her, you know, without needing anything back.
And, you can feel their love, like, growing for each other. Like, it's like it's a gradual thing. You know,
In this scene just here, because he's got their he's got their attention now, and that's it's not really a good thing. It's kind of like a foreshadowing, events to come.
Yeah, and that's a good thing to say, because the film is actually an example of a movie that doesn't really signal its intentions beforehand. It slowly is creeping in this darkness, and obviously when you look back at the movie, you remember the heavy-duty violence, but you should really remember that you can't predict it. It's not like we discussed when we, at this time, recorded Seventh Curse podcast. It doesn't feel like a regular Hong Kong movie in that way, because it's a bit more thought out, a bit more written, probably. It's not one of those movies that where they made up everything on the spot, you know. And if they did, good fucking job in keeping, track of the script and all of that. And but having said that, I love Hong Kong movies where they do switch gears quite harshly. And obviously, Scared Stiff is still sort of the still reigning champion in terms of gear switcher. You know, going from Eric Tsang as a sex robot to Chia Fat, killing him off viciously, and ESP ending where cars attack Chia Fat. You know, I love that stuff as well. But it's kind of refreshing when you see a movie, especially at this time, that takes itself seriously. Now we're gonna, they probably knew movies, the filmmakers, that were kind of all over the place, so they thought to themselves, let's make something that is not all over the place, where everything seems to logically develop into one another, which is refreshing, especially since Hong Kong movies were made at such frequency as they were at this time. And wow, the wonderful Sunny Fang. On a serious note, do you think he has burn damage of some kind? Or is, I've never read that. I've just, he's scarred, obviously, to some degree.
Yeah.
It looks
like
he has...
Is it like maybe acne or acne scars or something?
It just looks like acne scars, yeah.
It's quite pronounced around the cheeks.
But
I think it gives him his look.
Yeah, look and love, and what a fantastic character act. And why don't you tell us a little bit about what there is to know about Sunny Fang, Tom?
Yeah, Sunny Fang, a.k.a. Kong Pong, for the most part seems like an actor who picked and chose his parts with deliberation and consideration, as within a career spanning 30 years, he only appeared in 22 films.
Yeah, that's what Tom is going to say. Just force-feeding cocaine,
this
mucus horror almost.
This is the first kind of... brutality of the film. Yeah.
Look at those wide eyes. I know he's calm here. That's the advantage of Sunny, though. He is his calmness and his extreme behavior as well. It's very appealing to me.
If it is someone born to play a villain, it's him.
Fuck yes.
It's just got the perfect face for it.
He's been in comedies as we'll talk about. But go ahead, Tom.
Yeah, I mean, he was typecast, as a villain, down to his looks, and he racked up small parts as trial bosses, loan sharks, prosecutors, and he's probably notable to most people as Boss Pai in Jackie Chan's Miracles.
Yeah, he's very sick, even before he gets killed. I remember he moved very slowly in that movie. It seemed like he was sick, if I remember the movie correctly, Miracles. But regardless, he gets killed off... quite quickly, and then Jackie becomes the new boss. That's the actor I wanted to sort of re-examine the most when doing research for this movie, Sunny Fang. And I don't know how familiar you guys were with him aside from Miracles. Could you even connect the name to the face, first of all?
No, not personally, no.
Not for Rich Thurston, no.
But it's such a fantastic Scarface, and you know, it works for him, and those intense eyes while we watch this intense fight action, you know, we shoved down the toilet. It's just unkind, man.
Yeah.
It's never funny. and so Felix Locke, obviously, he uses Jane as... oh, by the way, back to Sunfang later. This is one of my absolute favorite beats by the director that we still not talked about, but we will, Guk Gaolong. You know, simple moments like this with, obviously, it's a dolly, camera on a dolly, moves about 45 degrees. Here's the character beaten up mentally and physically, and he cherishes, looks at the greatest memory between him and Cathy Chow's character. And it's not to be taken lightly how difficult it is to evoke audience's emotion via a quiet moment like this. It requires to establish it well. I think it's a tape fault of some kind there because the scene repeats actually a little bit, but regardless, it gives us time to speak about it a little bit more. And I think it's dramatic beats that are really tough to convey, because what we think when we think of the piano, you know, we remember it as a likable stretch of the movie. It sort of triggered their day together, their great day together, and now all of that's kind of being destroyed slowly but surely. Essentially only the piano is whole. Because it still plays, if I remember the movie correctly. It's not like it's gone out, the actual song within it has, you know, broken or anything. And I mean, talk about your heart sinking as well in terms of a scene like that, you know what I mean? So did you watch any particular Sunny Fang movies as a prep, David, for all this?
No, I've seen him in a couple of things, but he's not someone I'm overly familiar with. It's just, you know, in this, at least, you know, in this film that I know, he's really, really, you know, just spot on, you know, he's entirely convincing. Which he needs to be that, you know, in that role particularly, you know, someone who's really, really strong and just really, you know, you can buy him, as the boss, you know, completely, and you do. It's just, you know, it's a pitch perfect performance.
Yeah, as I said, I really wanted to rewatch a lot of his movies, and I did. Especially, you know, one of the greatest ones is Thunder Cops 2 with Stephen Chow and Sandra. Not a comedy. Jeff Lau directed it, but fucking hell, that was a dark Jeff Lau film. And no doubt he's a mean-ass, over-the-top villain there, Sunny Fang, wielding big fucking guns, and, you know, and being very gleeful in a Joker kind of way, you know, from Batman, doing his senseless killings. He even runs away laughing maniacally with his hands over his head. You know, and... he's also in one of his greatest roles that I rewatched also is in Stefan Yip's Missing Man with Joey Wong and Alex Mann. He has a very crucial part as part of the mystery in that thriller. I won't reveal what it is. A very underrated gem, a straight thriller, very well-told thriller. Stefan Yip was the director of Mad Stylist as well, and I Love Miss Fox, two of my very much favorite movies. Yeah, it's a great phase, and Missing Man is probably where he's most well used, because he's both, you know, over the top but kind of, you know, subtle as well. You know, he can speak very low and very quietly, and then snap, and that's kind of frightening. That way, and it's kind of the same here when you watch his initial scenes during the scene where they force feed the cocaine to the guy. His eyes are big, but he's not, you know, shouting anything. And later on in the film, definitely we will be seeing a larger side of Sunny. But a really fantastic actor. And he was in Her Fatal Ways, the Dodo Chen comedy. So you got to hear his actual voice. Well, yeah, he played a trial boss, but since it's a comedy, a bit more lighter. And when I'm saying you got to hear his voice, those movies by Alfred Cheung, and also co-starring Alfred, they were shot in Sing Sound, which is always nice. You get to hear Carol and Tony Leung and all the guys. By the way, Matt Stylist, that's an aside, that's Stefan Yip directed who did Missing Man with Sunny Fang. It's a Michael Wong Ken Cheng vehicle. It's a category 3 movie. It's a really cool dark comedy, and it features Michael Wong and Ken Cheng singing Diana together in one scene. it's great. I think Michael might have played a saxophone, or it was a saxophone on the soundtrack. Michael does play the saxophone in real life. So, you know, these two, I mean, the character Liu Weihong and Kathy plays, they are kind of, you know, both are especially easy to manipulate because she doesn't have a say in it, and they can actually lie to her in terms of what they're doing in terms of the drug smuggling, and he's obviously being easily pushed around as well. And it seems those are similar fates, you know what I mean? Their fates are kind of sealed and similar, and any idea of, you know, flourishing, them, you know, getting on the right track in life and being happy, it's a movie where such flourishing is easily squashed.
This bit here is where, you know, he's sort of...
Where are we now, David?
The bit where he's got sort of... he's kind of, you know, kind of like a weak sort of self-preservation instinct. It's gone, like, gone completely, you know, it's like suicidal now.
Yeah.
Throwing drugs out the window.
Yeah. Whoa, that's a mean-looking stunt there.
Yeah.
That's not composite shit where, you know, they insert the car and the actor separately. You know, a stuntman had to roll out and that car just whooshed by. And that's the kind of stuff you can't fake. And not with the film space and shit, you know what I mean, to crank it. And going back a little when Felix is kicking Kathy, you know, punching her in the stomach, I don't react to harsh gore in a kind of a disturbing way. I like gore and I think it's funny. Oftentimes, but I react personally to real violence, and therefore that scene where Felix kicks Kathy around and punching her in the stomach, that makes me wince. That stuff, and even, you know, these kind of stunts and where the characters are falling down the stairs, you know, it's really well conveyed. You know, it's a hard fall, and I think she's really fucking hurt. And you know, look at her. You know, she's, you know, they're definitely emoting suffering, which I know doesn't sound like revolutionary acting or anything, but you know. There's a reason that David, you know, just said, ooh, you know, it's audience reaction. What else can you ask for?
Yeah, I mean, there's the bit there. I mean, she goes straight downstairs. He slides down the stairs on his back. That's just like, oh, you know, back first. That's like, oof. Nasty.
What do you think, Tom, in terms of that violence? Do you wince at that stuff where it's, you know, where the seemingly more realistic stuff, like, you know, women being beaten is obviously never funny in any context.
Yeah.
But if you think of that scene that I've just been talking about where Felix Locke kicks her around.
Yeah, it's more kind of easy to be entertained and be in awe of when it's really kind of gory and over the top. But when it's kind of harsh and very physical, it's wince-inducing.
Mm-hmm.
To see it happen.
Yeah, it's to say a really pretentious thing, but this is what I wrote in my notes in terms of that scene and really how she, you know, she's gravely injured and all of that. It's and it's kind of true for both of them to an extent, and it might sound silly, but whatever. It feels like an angel or two angels having their wings clipped, really, because they try to do good, they try to, you know, be happy, and. And the spiral is really going downwards, and and I'm saying that really as a serious thing. I get affected thinking of it that way too.
Yeah, it seems like they're on like a path to freedom or happiness, and they're kind of, you know, cut short by something that happens, which is, you know, sad, very sad. And it's this whole kind of this last half hour is just like a nightmare, getting worse and worse, and the intensity just builds and builds and builds, and it's amazing to look at.
Yeah, by this point, you know, he's not prioritizing his job at all, you know, Liu Weihong, you know, his fight for, you know, making the society a better place remains strong, but now he wants to stop, as we talked about at the beginning of the commentary, sort of a small war instead that he possibly can win. But even if that, by this point, is, you know, maybe he thinks that I can't win, but I need to stop this anyway, it's certainly... If it doesn't ring true now, it definitely rings true later when he's just an animal, and it's just nothing matters anymore. Just take out one of many drug traffickers and triads and vicious triads, and you know, thinking ahead of the consequences in terms of the law. You know, well, what law are they obeying. So why should I? And out of all things, I thought of Chiang Fat in A Better Tomorrow. Not that he looks like him, but obviously the patch of his head and a little bit over his eye. That was kind of reminiscent of A Better Tomorrow, because it's a classic character image of Chiang Fat. One of the action sequences in A Better Tomorrow in the garage is Chiang Fat still with still he has it all up till the end of the film, that after being viciously beaten, he still has that over his face. So it's never too bad to evoke classic imagery, but it's not done in an obvious way, though.
No.
And certainly this movie doesn't feel like a better tomorrow, even when you get to the action, you know.
No.
But I was thinking, the English title of the film, I think, is very well thought out. And that doesn't happen a whole lot. If you think about it, nobody's hero. Who cares? He's going to be nobody's hero. No one's probably going to know what he's done, even if he hadn't been involved with this, increasingly violent, triad story and the conflict with the triads. It's going to be nobody's hero in the end. And that really hit me as well. It's an unselfish act that he's eventually going to, do various unselfish acts. And again, you can't win against the entire world, so pick your battles. And in this case, he has to pick a really, really harsh and bloody battle. And it speaks to me, this movie. Maybe more deep for me than you, I don't know, but still, it's it does affect you. Would you agree?
At the time I got this, it's just, I picked the case up and it looked like, sort of a, violent kind of action movie. So, I bought it purely on that level, but actually, watching the film, it still really sort of gets to me today. It's better, given it's sort of, it's the year it was produced, they were Hong Kong was making so many films. It's better than it had any right to be. It's better than it sort of should have been, really. There's no particular reason that it actually it turned out as well as it did. It just, the people who were making it, they took the time and took the care, and they put a lot of work in. But it's no more likely to succeed than any other sort of film at the time. It's just it was another film. Mm-hmm. But they, it's really got something. I mean, like I mentioned earlier about the script probably being better than it needed to be. It feels like that. That's one of the things that really works in its favour. The script is more than solid.
I feel like it could have easily been, a throwaway kind of hour and a half, but the director really had a vision on screen. He really knew what he was doing and had a story to tell, and I think he really comes through that there's a lot of hard work being thought into the story and the characters and everything. There's a really nice progression throughout the whole kind of hour and a half as well, which I think really works.
Some really strong performances as well.
Yeah,
there's no real weak links, I don't think. Nope. There's no one who's sort of is noticeably bad. Everyone, even the smaller roles, they're just, they are what they need to be, even in the small character roles.
We're going to mention a little bit about the director there, for Guk Gao Leung. There's no biographical info, extensive filmography for this director. Nobody's Hero was Guk's debut movie out of, in total, of five debut movies. Five debut movies, fucking hell. in total of five movies.
Change his name.
that was a good point, you never know. And it all ended with 2002's Ghost Office, and it really seems like his voice was heard. It's a great little scene where, it happens very unexpectedly. By the way, he was after Felix's character, and then that happens again, an intention gone wrong for Liu Weihong.
I think I've seen Ghost Office.
It's a, it gives me an impression that it was several stories in one, to be honest. Because I think he's one of the three directors on it, actually.
Yeah, I think there was like Stephen Fung, I think, possibly.
Haunted Office. This is a different one. Yeah, they bleed into each other, those pretty shit movies. Yeah. But his first movie was not his hero, really. Yeah. And it's felt. It's stuff that's felt. And there's a it's a nicer, you know, we don't know the full extent of this sequence until we see the surveillance footage. I'll get back to Gukgaldan. And speaking of surveillance footage, that grainy surveillance footage that Liu Huang is going to watch, again, a story beat I like. That they are focused. They are focused on how to develop this. But, you know, I'm very weak for sort of the best, in my opinion, though, of the fake documentaries out there that's been produced throughout the years. And what I mean by that, the movies like Cannibal Holocaust and Blair Witch Project, where they use, you know, staged documentary footage to convey real horror, in the case of those two movies. And I think the grainy surveillance footage with Sunny Fang and Felix Locke coming up is... I get really affected by that. The more it's unclear, the more disturbing sort of a murder within unclear and grainy and sort of grainy footage, it really hits me in the right place. That real horror, and I'm very weak for that. Even parts of Cloverfield, for instance, works really well for me, despite Cloverfield being a monster movie shot through you know, amateur movie footage. So it's just a style of horror that could work very well for me. I mean, this shit is pretty good because they don't need to set up a whole lot of blood effects and just convey the power of it, and that's more than enough. That evokes reality in my book.
Yeah, because the way that they've done it, I mean, any kind of, you know, technical sort of trickery that they're using or not using, you know, it's got the disguise of the image quality. Mm-hmm. So, you know, even if you don't see anything, you know, it looks like you are. You know, it looks like you're seeing something, even when you're not.
And it's no shitty, like, added grindhouse effects that you have today. It's more actual, you know, shoot it, you know, via one such camera on VHS and then project it, you know. So it's more well done than the added grindhouse effects that are so boring and cliched. In my book, it doesn't work today in 2011 to add those retro effects and all of that. So, but going back to Gukgaldan, our director, it really seems like his voice was heard in an ultimate way with his debut here. It really is the best of the movies I've seen. And while Exploitation and Category 3 work followed via, I think it's a TV made for TV movie or series called Hong Kong Criminal Archives, and he made the episode.
I love that. Love that shot. So into it, I love that shot where the light bulb like goes off in his head. Yeah. He knows what he's got to do.
Yeah. Good dramatic beat.
Definitely. Yeah.
But he made this Hong Kong part of a Hong Kong Criminal Archives series or made for TV movies called Female Butcher, and this was actually a movie depicting the real life serial killer Lam Go Wan, that later was made into a big screen version with Simon Yam playing Dr. Lam Go Wan. But you know what? He did in Hong Kong Criminal Archives as well. And actually, Billy Tang, the director of Dr. Lam, produced Hong Kong Criminal Archives. So there was a relationship that started, that went to the big screen, and then went on for several movies. The Billy Tang-Simon Yam relationship. That was rather cool. And I think Hong Kong Criminal Archives has never been released with subtitles being originating on TV and stuff like that. And never, there's never really no interest in it, you know, for a box set release or anything today. So it's something that if I want to see it, I need to see it unsubbed, if I even can get it that way. But he doesn't work for Danny Lee, Gukgaldan. Presumably a sort of shot on video, no subs, Magnum production. For Danny Lee, they did a few of those, and they did a movie called Internal Affair in 1994, and that was pretty much it until he co-directed Ghost Office in 2002. And again, it seems like it's three ghost stories in one, or four ghost stories in one, seeing as it has three directors, which is not uncommon at the time. And also, of note, in terms of a name on his resume, a movie title, is something he wrote and directed called Laser Drama Action in Space. But, you know, looking at the VCD cover and stuff like that, I'm willing to bet it was shot on video or for TV by the looks of it, and no subs therefore, but a great name. But there was some background on him, actually, that I could find. He started out as assistant director before he directed on Clarence Fox's Shaw Brothers drama On the Wrong Track. Clarence Fox, of course, directed Naked Killer and various other movies. On the Wrong Track was made in 1983, starring Andy Lau, and he worked in the same capacity, Gu Gaolong, on the underrated Ching Su Dong, ancient China 1930s period piece, A Terracotta Warrior, that starred Gong Li and acclaimed director Zhang Yimou, hero director, House of Flying Daggers director, a starring vehicle for him as this Terracotta Warrior that gets transferred to a more modern time era. It's a pretty good little movie. For many years, a bit of a rarity, but now prints and subtitle prints have turned up on various DVDs releases around the world, so you can see A Terracotta Warrior. But more recently, the career of Gu Gaolong is he's a planner, has been a planner on several Milky Way movies, overseeing productions such as Election 2, Exiled, Triangle, Mad Detective, and Linger, as well as being the executive producer on Love on a Diet. Planning, by the way, in terms of duties, involves develop the likes of storyline, cast, oversee the production, essentially, as I said, you know, kind of like a supervising producer.
Yeah, I can see where he could do that, because his approach here is very very thorough. So I mean, this would seem to have the would seem to have the right kind of temperament and personality to. For that kind of a role as well.
Oh yeah, definitely. And it seems like he's not working with Milky Way anyway anymore currently. Anyway, so. But a biographical note of his on Hong Kong Movie Database mentions he is, as of or in 2009, directing TV series in mainland China, just like Billy Tang actually. So, you know, Gu Gaolong has one classic definitely under his belt, and a damn impressive one. And it's obviously the one we're watching today, Nobody's Hero, and that's something to be so proud of, especially since this movie isn't just, you know, good for a few minutes here and there. It's actually a solid movie all throughout.
Yep.
Yeah, the progression of events spiraling out of control, and Lung slowly but surely, you know, being confident, brave, and standing up for himself, refusing to run. You know, he's blackmailed to try for money here, and trying to hide amongst the hawkers. Is that what you call them? The
very hawkers, there, yeah.
And who always run when the police come. You know, so
yeah, they're pretty. It's a fairly rare sight these days.
Yeah, I can imagine.
A lot of the people that used to do this, they're now kind of got special kind of indoor markets that, you know, serve the same kind of, you know, yeah, purpose, but you don't see many many kind of these old style sort of carts at street level anymore, really.
Yeah, but what it's almost like a stampede, this, you know, with their big ass carts that they need to haul around, and when they all run at the same time, you know, it looks fucking dangerous in real life here with the car stunts and what have you. We might not get into them too much, but I want to give them a mention anyway. I don't think that explosion really was realistic, that it went up like that that quickly, but whatever. There's nothing wrong with explosions every now and again. It looks good in the trailer. So, yeah. But I want to give the action directors a mention anyway, and I'll see if I can talk a little bit about them as before the movie's over. Poon Kin Guan and Benz Kong are the two action directors. Actually, action directors that have worked very much together on quite a lot of movies, so I'll see if I can mention some more about that. I wanted to talk a little bit more about how much I admire that the movie gradually becomes.
I love that scene.
How the movie gradually becomes the way we laughed at it, and the way it becomes the way we remember it. You know, it never feels, thankfully, you know, it can't be mentioned enough, like several movies in one, which is great every now and again in Hong Kong cinema, despite me anyway, because I forgot to ask you earlier, guys, do you like the mixture, that odd mixture that Hong Kong cinema can be? Especially Scared Stiff, if you guys remember that, you know, it's all over the place. Do you enjoy that, or do you have trouble adjusting to that? What do you say, David?
I like that, personally. It works well in that. I mean, it's less sort of frantic here. There are, you know, you do have the moments of light relief. Mm-hmm. That serve the purpose. But you know, just the way the script is written, you know, it's very well structured. So it doesn't feel like, you know, you're going off at a tangent, you know, just for the sake of it. It's all kind of part of the idea, part of the plan.
Pardon me, David, there was a great line in subtitles. You'll be disappointed when you see me, he says to her. Maybe I'll never see you again. I think that's such a poignant line. You know, he has to do what he has to do, but he obviously has remorse if she knows that he's going to go on the rampage. He wants to go on, you know, a bloody rampage and probably, you know, dying in the process. That's what it's...
It's so understated as well when he's acting. It's not over the top.
Good
or he's
point.
Trying or anything.
Good
it's
point.
Just to the point. He's just looking at her and it's, yeah, really just powerful.
Yeah. What about you, Tom? Do you like the Hong Kong cinema for being crazy and all over the place every now and again?
Yeah, for me, I think it's dependent on the genre for me. Like, if it's kind of like an action comedy or, you know, it's a bit goofy, I don't really mind, or something like...
Carry On Pickpocket, if you guys remember that.
I love Carry On Pickpocket, and I think that works. But I think when it's a film like this, or it's very serious in tone, I think it sometimes kind of messes up with it if they drop a bit of comedy here and there, or, you know, going off on tangents. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think it's down to the genre for me personally.
We're coming up on, you know, the movie has been violent. Now it's going to be very highly gory and you know, not fair to, you know, obviously she's now taken out of the hospital and they're beating the shit out of her, you know. This is definitely a stuntman, obviously, aided by the fact that she obviously has had the eye operation and has a bandage over her. But, you know, the drill violence that comes up, you know, for once it's not violence where it's threat only. They fucking do that, and no better guy than Sunny Fang to execute the mainland friend. And
never blinks, never blinks.
That, the shot of her then, where you see this sort of bloodstain, kind of
bandage
across the face. Yeah, that's kind of the image from the Hong Kong VCD.
Yeah, as well as the Laserdisc, and I think poster campaign overall was designed around that image of the drill in the same shot as that. But I mean, look at this shot!
Damn,
gets in the mouth as well.
It's a fucking great little effect, you know. Obviously executed through rapid cuts, but you don't. They rightly showed it in that angle, and therefore, you know, it's a drill into a blood pack, but you didn't need to build a full prosthetic that we had in view. You know, not everybody needed to be Lucio Fulci, but so that's understated gore compared to Lucio Fulci, but it's fucking evil, and it goes fast too. You know, it's not like it would have been horrible if it went slowly, but you know, Sunny Fang doesn't think twice about it, just drills him, and you know, his head is, you know, like butter in that regard, you know, when that drill enters him.
Yeah.
It's really a well-executed little squib effect, really. And the squib effects are, you know, physical stuff you need to set up on set and execute properly. And it's no, as we talked about many times, there's no better gags than physical gags. It shows Hong Kong cinema, yeah, being a production line, a heavy-duty production line, but, you know, they knew their stuff technically, definitely, when they put the mind to it, even if they shot this movie in a relatively short time span. I reckon this movie may be shot over a month, maybe two at most. Because obviously it's not a studio movie either. It's all on the streets without permits and what have you. And, you know, talk about now... He's well into becoming, you know, a numb animal. Now, you know, you've never seen Liu Weihong this way. And
no, the sheer desperation on his face speaks a thousand words.
Yeah, and I mean, you saw this movie prior to the commentary for the first time, and you know, I've said, Tom, essentially that all 10 people who have seen this movie kind of have loved it, And I guess you can relate to that, you know, that it's kind of mind-blowing, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I think the first time I watched it, when it all wrapped up, I said to myself, you know, where did this amazing rough little masterpiece come from?
Because why isn't it more known? It's kind of unfair.
Why isn't it more known? It is, yeah. I mean, it definitely is. It's very unfair. I think it's amongst the elite, kind of, you know, the line of Hong Kong films. I think everyone who's into the genre should see it. Mm. It's definitely got a lot to say as well.
Yeah. I mean, I'd even love to see it sort of pop up on, like, the, you know, those, you know, like a Joe Sales, like, legendary, you know,
yeah,
collections. You know, they're just, you know, they're fairly rough.
Yeah, it's probably
least,
by...
It's
probably with a production company that no one bought an entire catalog out of, a la Joyce Says, who had a lot of Golden Harvest stuff, obviously.
Yeah, true.
So this is, you know, possibly done by a production company that only existed for very few movies, or even one movie.
Yeah. If someone's got, you know, has a print of this somewhere, they probably don't even know they've got it.
No. But having said that, I might be crucified for saying this. I wouldn't want the movie to look much better than it does right now, because the full screen print doesn't feel, it's not very much cropped, and I just love the feel. It looks as it should, in my opinion. And I don't know if that's akin to, it helps that we have grown up with VHS, but it's a good looking VHS print, and there's a reason many people have loved it, because it's not like they've been turned off by the quality. I think it's such a perfect quality for a movie. Coming up is a great when they bounce him into the tap there. I think it could have bounced him there. They just shoved him into the tap there. I think they could have gotten a little bit more power out of that effect, but the blood that is still
on the tap,
that's why it fucking works.
Yeah.
But it's kind of, it's a real tap, obviously, so I don't think they could have shoved Li Wei-hung into it that hard, you know. So it's kind of, you know, a high concept in a way, you know, let's shove him into that hard tap, you know. But it works, you know. It's an aho moment, and now he's an animal with a gun. And what we're getting is, to be simple about it, in this relatively short action finale, but incredible action finale, this is, you never knew Li Wei-hung could be capable of this, and you get a very cool mixture, to be very simple about it, of John Woo and Ringo Lam. Because you got the dual guns, you got a lot of shooting, but you got more of the grounded, harder Ringo Lam type violence, and even Kirk Wong to an extent was very good at conveying hard-edged violence. And it's absolutely stunning, this sequence, technically, and just mesmerizing, you know. I can't come up with any more words for it, you know. It's amazing headshots in it, and squib effects, and editing, and just fucking animalistic violence with a little bit of selected slow motion within it, which is great, you know, when Sunny Fang is sitting at the desk. Oh,
great shot!
And there's some strobe effects for some reason coming from somewhere, which is a great little effect. I don't know where the light source is for the strobe, kind of strobe effect. But
the sequence just then, where there's the two of them kind of shooting each other. It's the shot of Li Wei-hung there that's on the cover of the VHS.
Right. They must have chosen an iconic
kind of
shot.
Where he's been hit, and he's just kind of, you know, kind of flinching slightly from that. It's pretty much that picture.
I get chills watching this, guys. I mean, it's such an intense few minutes, this. And obviously the whole movie's great. I'm not saying it.
And look, the music just cuts there. Just cuts, like the music just stops. Really powerful.
Yeah, you know, no mercy. And it's not the kind of movie where there's late remorse, you know. It's just kill animalistic violence is some of the best in Hong Kong cinema. If you think the end of Hong Kong Godfather, the Lung Gai An movie at Shaw Brothers, I love animalistic Hong Kong violence. And who knew Li Wei-hung had this in him, knowing him from various comedies and knowing that face is one of those comedic faces I don't like, and then you see this fucking role, and
close your eye. I love how the director like fucks with us twice now. there's like two bluffs with the ending, and then there's like a very bittersweet ending. Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah, so I don't have time to go into deep in depth for the action in terms of the action director's filmographies, but they do deserve a mention again. Kong and Poon Kin Guan, they stage a variety of violent scenes throughout, and then blows us away with something that is in tune with the movie as well. That incredibly violent ending.
They're not isolated, I think, with the action scenes. Sometimes even if you get solid action scenes, they can be a bit isolated from the rest of the film, but they flow perfectly into the narrative.
And guys and listeners, you really should look up these two guys on Hong Kong Movie Database. They did movies together quite often. So we really summarized all throughout that we absolutely love this film, and we hope that now that it's more available on the internet to view, that this commentary, along with the various torrents out there, and possibly the movie being on YouTube, I heard in full. I really hope you take time to watch this. If it's your thing, I don't know. Obviously, not everybody likes everything, but I really hope you take time to watch this. It's a hidden gem, and that's all I'm gonna say after speaking a whole lot. The hidden gem, absolutely fantastic. And so, you. What about you, David?
It's a real surprise. If you like action, if you like run action, you'll like this because it delivers on that. But it's a real surprise too. It's a real. Hidden. It's got hidden depths.
Yeah, we have some time here after the end screen here. So, what about you, Tom? How do you sum it up?
Yeah, a secret little masterpiece, which I thought I'd seen all the kind of the big amazing films from Hong Kong cinema this far into my viewing habits, but this just came along and just blew me away, and this definitely deserves to be alongside, you know, The Killer and A Better Tomorrow and Police Story, and it definitely does sit alongside those, because they're not similar films, but in terms of, you know, the way they work and how good they are, they definitely deserve to sit together.
That's a well done summary, man. And thank you everybody for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. Hope you liked the movie and liked our commentary. And so that's us out for another edition of Commentary on Fire. So I've been your host, Kenneth Wilson, and with me was David Harris.
Goodbye.
And Tom Kent Williams. Tom KW in Hong Kong Day.
Bye, guys.
Bye.